Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our guest is Mark McGranigan, a founding partner at Muse Software and a principal investigator at Ink and Switch, and we're going to talk about designing for tablets. This episode is brought to you by Hover, the domain name registrar that helps you brand your next big creative idea. With Hover, you can register a domain name for your design portfolio or creative business, choosing from over 300 domain name extensions. Find your next catchy domain name at hover.com/UIbreakfast. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Jane. It's great to be on.
We're excited. Tell us more about all those names that we heard in the intro. What is Ink and Switch? What is Muse Software? What do you do?
Yeah, so Muse Software is a tool for thought primarily on the iPad right now. So the idea is we wanted to create a software product specifically for the iPad that helps you have better ideas and be a better thinker.
How about Ink and Switch? You have a very interesting concept of what that is.
Yeah, so Ink and Switch is an industrial research lab focusing on computing for creators. And Muse is actually a spin out of that research lab about a year and a half ago. And the research lab is now, I want to say, 4, maybe 5 years old. And in that lab, where I was previously a principal investigator, we've been researching how do you bring computing back to these roots of tools for having great ideas, for making beautiful art, for building new scientific discoveries, things like that, as a complement to the world of, say, enterprise SaaS and consumer, both of which already have a huge amount of investment. We feel like there was this kind of missing third leg of computing that was getting lost in the modern ecosystem.
Tell us a bit of your background story, because you have some impressive company names there. You've been engineering previously at Stripe and Heroku, so you clearly know how B2B SaaS works and all that jazz, but now clearly you are in a much more interesting direction. How does it feel and how did it work?
Yeah, so I was excited to make this change after doing 8 or 10 years in the world of classic enterprise B2B SaaS. And people say, Mark, that seems like such a weird, total left field change. Well, yes and no. So it is moving to a more of a consumer or prosumer market, but it's also building a digital tool. That's something I learned a lot about at those two companies. And something I worked with one of my co-founders at Muse, Adam Wiggins. So I feel like I'm bringing some of the lessons that we learned there around how do you build great digital tools, how do you make great experiences, how do you operate those tools to the world of prosumer apps.
So let's talk about the main subject, which is designing for tablets. And Muse, your primary product at the moment, is a tool for iPad. So how did you decide to focus on tablets specifically? Why not? Does it include phones even, or is it just purely tablets?
Yeah, so there are a few angles here. Let me give you my theory on the different device form factors and how Muse fits in. So we think there are currently three really important form factors. Most obviously, there's the phone and the desktop. And then we think the tablet is a critical third form factor. And we did a lot of studies of creative professionals in their work environments and how they use these devices. And we saw that they use these devices for very distinct things. So the phone is used for quick on-the-go capture, lookup, reading, maybe browsing. And the desktop is used for really powerful, complex editing and authoring workflows. But as we studied how people were using the devices in the creative process, there's a really important step in between where you go from, okay, you have some raw materials, and at the end, you have a finished authored product. In the middle, you have basically thinking, ideating, ruminating, brainstorming, sketching, note-taking, outlining. And that is really conducive to the tablet form factor because it's very natural. You can sit back in your couch, you know, you can lean back, you can write stuff in handwriting, you can touch things directly on the screen. And so as we thought about how do you build a tool for thought, we felt like the tablet was a really good place to start because it's in many ways the form factor that's best suited to thinking. And furthermore, we felt like the tablet had not really been studied and invested in as a unique form factor. A lot of the apps for iPad and other tablets are either like big phone apps or small desktop apps, which we think that doesn't quite take advantage of the unique form factor. So basically, we saw an opportunity to help people have better ideas using this underutilized platform.
Since this product comes out of an industrial research lab, this clearly means that you did some user research, as you described, watched people in their native, you know, creative environment. So how did you even approach those learnings? Like, from the practical standpoint, did you put a number of people together in a room for a focus group, or did you interview them, or did you give them home assignment? How did it work?
Yeah, it wasn't super formal. It was more like over the course of working on various projects, the lab did a whole series of experimental projects. We would start often by talking to users informally. Like, we email people on our network, or we reach out on Twitter, or you network into the community that you're trying to serve with your prototype, and you talk with them about how they do their work, their experiences. And over the course of doing maybe a dozen projects in the lab, you build up a lot of patterns and experiences and repeated themes you hear from users. So I'll give you one example, actually, on tablets. A very common story with iPads is that people bought an iPad with this incredible aspiration of, this feels like the future. I want to use this device. I want to be taking notes and doing all these things with a tablet. And then they have what we call the nightstand problem, where they end up leaving their iPad in the nightstand, maybe using it for Netflix or YouTube or something, but it never quite fulfilled that aspiration that they had. And we realized that was because of a lack of the appropriate apps for the tablet. That's just one example of the type of thing that we were able to learn with this user study.
I guess iPad users fall in many different camps, and that creative kind of user definitely exists. One of the folks I follow online is Sean Blong, and he has a ton of productivity articles about how he writes on his tablet, etc. I definitely belong to the camp who gives the iPad to the kids so I can use the desktop properly, and so on and so forth. So, when you design software for a tablet, how do you make sure you serve both camps well, or do you just pick one audience for your app and work in that direction?
We try to be pretty specific about how we think the iPad should be used, but it's still usable by a broad range of professionals. So just to give you an idea of the type of people who might use Muse or other similar products kind of in the spirit of the research lab, a lot of entrepreneurs, product managers, actually many designers, writers, filmmakers, authors, journalists, basically people who work with ideas for a living, find they benefit from a tool like this. Now, in terms of how we suggest that they use it, again, a lot of iPad apps are very lowest common denominator. So if you think about how you use a phone, right? There's basically 1.5 ways to use a phone. You can either use it one-handed with your thumb, basically touching things one thing at a time, or maybe you can hold it with one hand and tap things with one or two fingers. That's basically the only way you can use a phone. Some people hold it, maybe occasionally hold it sideways, like play a game, but that's pretty rare. Likewise, with a desktop, there's really only one or maybe two ways to use it. You have your keyboard and your mouse, or maybe you're in like power user or keyboard mode, right? But with a tablet, there are tons of ways you could potentially use it. You could be holding it like a book. You could be putting it on your desk. You could be using the stylus or not. You could be using the keyboard or not. You could be using one hand or two hands. And a lot of people, when they approach designing for the tablet, they'll say, what's kind of in common with all those different scenarios? It's that you can tap it with one finger. And so that's how you get the big iPhone interface on the tablet. Instead, we said, we're going to advise people that if they want to use a tablet for this part of their creative process, they should take advantage of things that make the tablet special. So for us, one of the biggest things is the stylus. So to use Muse, you basically need a stylus. And we found that essentially all of the potential customers who were aspiring to do this type of work had a stylus. So that wasn't actually that big of a problem. Also, if you want to do a lot of text entry, you should probably have a keyboard. And if you want to be a real power user and manipulate a lot of your content fluidly and fast, you should probably use both your hands. So you should put your tablet on your lap or on your desk or something, or at least have it somewhere sturdy so that you can use both your hands. So that's an example of how we try to avoid a lowest common denominator design approach on the iPad and instead embrace the things that make the form factor special.
Tell us more about the design patterns that you are using in the app. Are any of these traditional, or did you invent like some interesting approaches that are maybe harder to adopt but make your software truly special?
Yeah, we have some pretty unique UI approaches in Muse. So just to name a few, one is we have basically no Chrome. So when you open the app, you see just a blank screen. It's actually funny. The first time we submitted our app for app review with the App Store, they said it's broken. It's just a blank screen. Like, yes, that's a feature, not a bug, right? So, and that, again, that goes back to the creative process. If you really want people to be able to be deeply focused on their work and not have all this Chrome around the edges, like buttons and menus and stuff. Another idea is that we we try to give people the ability to really quickly switch tools in a way that preserves muscle memory. So when you have a stylus, by default, if you use the stylus on the screen, it will do black ink. But if you hold one finger down on the screen and use a stylus, it will erase. And if you hold two fingers down and use a stylus, it will do a lasso selection. And the reason that's really powerful is because you can build muscle memory around that. You don't need to remember like what tool is currently selected. You just know when I physically have one finger on the screen, I'm using the stylus, that's the eraser. What other examples could I give? I mean, a big one for the app is that just that we combine a lot of different content types. And this is something that I actually think we're seeing. This one is less unique to Muse. I think it's actually a pattern that's emerging in the industry. The mixed media canvas is becoming a sort of essential content type that's now kind of table stakes. It's you can mix not just text in one screen or just images. Like you can have text and images and video and charts or what, you know, whatever it might be, PDF documents, ink in our case, whatever is important for your creative task can all be mixed on one canvas.
A few weeks ago, I had really great time with your co-founders at Muse talking about user onboarding. And I'd love you to to cover some of these angles here on this show. And we're going to link to that in the show notes for sure. You mentioned you have a blank screen in front of the new users. Well, that does not sound like a typical rich user onboarding. How do you approach that?
Okay, so we've added a bit more on top of the blank screen. So it's not totally just a yellow paper colored canvas as it was when we first put the app up for review. But now we have a few sample cards, just so you can see what's going on. And then we have a guided onboarding. So the idea with the onboarding is we didn't want to have one of those flows where it was like very restrictive. You know, you got to do steps 1 through 7 in order, and then you can use the product like an adult. It's more like you can use the product and do whatever you want right away. And if you elect, you can go to this sort of guided quest where there are, I think, maybe eight steps, eight key things you might want to learn with the app. And when you activate a quest, if you will, it pops into your Muse a few cards, where cards are the native content type of Muse. It's sort of cards on a canvas UI. It pops on a few cards that explain how you do this particular action in the app. So, for example, I think the first thing that we tell you how to do is move a card from one board to another by picking up the card with one hand, zooming into the other board and dropping the card. And we like this approach because it's using the app. So it's not a separate UI that's like the onboarding UI. It's just like content within the app. It's like first class content. And it gives the user a lot of agency, which is a huge theme for us with the product in the lab. You know, let users are adults, they're creative professionals. They should be able to do what they want. And if you provide the right context, they'll be able to learn the app successfully.
Yes, this theme of providing an autonomous experience is a recurring theme across many products, and you're clearly doing that well. Are there any other products that are in a similar direction that provide tools for creatives that inspired you or keep inspiring you and that you like look around? Or was this ideated in a vacuum, sort of?
No, so there's certainly existing tools in the cards on a canvas vein. So MyLinote is one that we had actually used a fair amount in the lab and that I really liked. And it works really well if you're on the desktop. And it's great to be able to have all kinds of mixed content in one place and for things to be freeform and for it to be collaborative in their case. There's also this emerging world of tools for thought. So I would say Notion is a leader there. Also Roam is a big up and coming one. And we're seeing huge interest in people for tools that help them have better ideas, organize their thoughts, things like that. Just that there's a huge amount of aspiration and demand behind that idea.
As we talk about tablets, do you think it's necessary to provide access to what you have ideated from your phone or from the desktop browser UI?
Yeah, so we think it's actually really important that you be able to connect the three form factors. Again, to recapitulate how we see the creative process playing out on the form factors, it's you take in content, you take quick notes, you scribble ideas on your phone, you ideate, you brainstorm on your tablet, and then you do final authoring on your desktop. So you need ways to be able to move content between those. We have some basic ways to get content into the app. Right now, you can do like an iOS share sheet, you can copy and paste links, things like that. And we also have basic ways to get stuff out of the app. You can export a PDF. You can export whatever the native content type is you're working with. Like if you're working with an image, you can export an image. But we think there's much more to do in both directions. And we actually believe really strongly that you shouldn't strive to be a one app for everything, which I feel like is what everyone tries to do. You know, this is the one app for all your stuff. We saw again with our research, that's kind of a dead end. Like you can never fully climb that hill. It's just, it's one new app after another. So instead, We're trying to build ways to make it really easy to get content in and get content out and make Muse more like a hub for your thinking process without being the place where you have to put everything.
Are there any interesting use cases that you've discovered after launching the prototype slash live app into the public? Any exciting customers?
Yeah, we've had all kinds of people try the app and get engaged with it. I mean, just to give you a few ideas. We had someone who's, I believe, a sort of like baseball coach or instructor, and they were using the animated GIFs feature to show different batting swings in action. We've had someone who on the side like advises restaurants. And so they had the PDF menus and they were like marked up, you know, I don't know, charge more for the steak or something. So all kinds of different and interesting use cases.
As our listeners are paving their way in mobile UX design, do you think there should be people specializing in just apps for iPads? Or is there an industry of iPhones and iPads? Or should it be like a universal UX designer who can do all kinds of devices?
Yeah, so I think it needs to be thought about deeply as a distinct subject. I don't think it necessarily needs to be a separate person. I think there's actually a benefit to having the context of how you move through the entire creative process across all of these device types and how they fit in, especially if you have a product that eventually is going to span them and is going to be interacting across them, right? But I do think it takes a while to deeply understand the platform and its limitations and its possibilities. And like honestly, I think we haven't nearly fully explored the design space of tablets in the way that I feel like we kind of have for phones. There's only so much you can do with 4x6 inches and one finger, right? But there's so much potential with tablets. So I feel like there's actually a lot of novel work to be done there. And that could use some dedicated attention.
On one hand, being qualified in a specific device type is one of the most obvious and also very productive, you know, refinements you can make about your design career. For example, a few years ago, I don't know, 5 or more, I decided to just do web applications, and that was very productive. Well, as a result, I'm sitting here and knowing not much about tablets and the design. And I imagine if I were tasked with the mobile app now, I would start with research, and that part is somewhat challenging because is there any other way except for installing like a dozen apps on your device to learn what kind of design paradigms work these days? Or is being a user the only way of learning that?
Yeah, I think being a user helps. I do think it's worth downloading and trying out a bunch of apps. We've also had very good luck in the lab with reaching out directly to experts. We would say, okay, we need to learn about you know C# programming of Surface devices. Who is the world's expert on C# programming of Surface devices? And let's just email them and ask them what they think. And people respond all the time. So I think in the sort of small world that we have around technology and design, you can also take advantage of that.
That's a great tip. Actually, usually tools like yours are built by someone who is a world-class expert in iPad programming, and then they come up with some ideation. You're working backwards from the idea to execution. That's interesting.
Yeah, and we also do reach out to experts in adjacent fields. For example, one thing I've done a lot of research and outreach on is latency and performance, which is something we think is extremely important on tablets. We can talk more about this. But there's a whole world of academics, of engineers who have spent months or years studying this. And you can go read their papers, you can read their websites, you can email them and ask questions, things like that.
Yeah, let's talk more about that.
Yeah, okay, so again, the tablet is unique here. Because when you have your finger directly on the screen and you're moving it and the thing under your finger doesn't move at the same time, that is incredibly concerning as a user. It feels really bad. And in fact, there are academic studies here that show if it's even a few milliseconds of delay, people notice it. And if it's more than, you know, maybe a few tens of milliseconds, it can feel quite bad. And it's even more acute when you're inking with a stylus because the point is finer. Like, could you imagine inking with a pen where the ink came out like 2 centimeters behind where your pen actually was? It's a disaster, right? So the tablet is extremely sensitive to latency. And then the iPad Pros, they actually have the capability to run at 120 frames per second. So you often see these Medium articles on performance, and they say, you know, remember, you only have 16 milliseconds per frame or else you run out of time. Well, that's like not even wrong, right? Because you only have 8 milliseconds per frame if you're at 120 FPS. And even then, you don't really have 8 milliseconds if you want to minimize latency, because every the shorter you make your cycle time, the faster you can respond to input events. So there's a very high importance and demand for performance on especially the iPad Pros, which is where we focus.
Give us an overview of the latest developments in the Apple industry, because with all this politics and everything going on, the Apple events kind of flew past by, and the iPad operating system that was introduced. Tell us more what kind of new paradigms it adds to our table.
Yeah, so I think the iPad OS is mostly laying groundwork. I think there were some iPad-specific improvements. For example, one that we've taken advantage of and use is the Scribble feature, where you can use your stylus when you've activated the Scribble mode to write text, and then the OS will convert that into typed text, and your app can use that as if the user had typed in. So you can go into Muse, and you can add, for example, a title on your board just by scribbling up in the upper left-hand corner. That's a good example of a iPad-specific user interface innovation from Apple. But I feel like that's mostly, the iPad OS thing is mostly laying the groundwork. It's kind of creating two separate roads, where if you believe in this hypothesis that the tablet can't just be a big phone, it's going to need to work quite differently over time. And as the tablet gets more capable, it's going to work more and more differently. So I feel like Apple right now is mostly just saying, you know, heads up, these roads are going to diverge.
Do you personally belong to the camp of people who are basically trying to replicate a laptop with their iPad by attaching their keyboard and doing their regular mundane tasks on an iPad, which I'm personally not a fan of?
Yeah, this one is so interesting. And there's even some differences of opinion of this within the company. Some people have this idea of using the iPad to, like you said, fully replace a desktop. And that's not for me. And I don't really buy it. Because again, the desktop is good at certain things that the iPad, especially as it's currently designed, is never going to catch up on. The amount of screen real estate, the incredible input precision and velocity of a mechanical keyboard, a dedicated mouse, these things are it's really hard to catch up. And if you do professional workflows like editing a podcast, for example, or editing videos, man, it's hard to see the iPad catching up. But I also, the place where I do think it makes sense is the portability of the iPad. So I think I've seen some people who have a desktop when they travel, they do the iPad as desktop thing, and that kind of makes more sense to me. I think there is a world where touch devices replace the desktop. So right now, the state of the art with touch devices is the iPad Pro. This is maybe a 13-inch screen, and that's about as big of a screen as can be made right now that has very high pixel density. It's very bright. 120 plus FPS and has very low, it's touch sensitive with very low latency. That's kind of, as far as I know, as big as they can make them, or at least commercially. But they're getting bigger every year. So eventually, if you draw the dots out to a few years from now, they're going to have a screen that's as big as a desktop monitor that has all of those touch device properties. And so at that point, you might ask, well, what if they made like an iPad that was like four times as big? And you're kind of seeing this now with the Microsoft Surface, which is a small desk size touch device, but doesn't have the density and the low latency and all of that the iPad has. But eventually, once you get there, then you can talk about maybe a desk size touch device replaces a desktop. Now that I think is more interesting, because then you could have a phone, a tablet, and a desktop, and they're all in a touch paradigm. Now the missing piece there, in addition to the hardware, obviously, is the state-of-the-art Pro interfaces on a tablet are not powerful enough, like I was alluding to. And one of the things we're trying to do with Muse in the lab is push that forward so you can have more powerful interactions, more pro user flows on the tablet. But I think we're going to need even more research to be able to displace a desktop eventually. And you probably need some auxiliary hardware as well to give you more input richness. But this is a little bit of speculation, but I do think maybe in the 3 to 5 year time horizon that we could see something like that displacing desktops. But I don't think it's going to be exactly like a 12-inch iPad is the only thing you ever work on.
There are a few moments in my, you know, device life experiences that I recall very vividly. And one of them was getting my hands on the first Retina iPhone, then on the first iPad, and that felt amazing. And then years later, we got the first bigger iPad, and I was just amazed with the kind of screen that is available to us humans, you know.
Yeah, I don't think people fully appreciate what's going on with the iPad Pro in particular. It's in our opinion, the most advanced consumer accessible computing device ever created. Like the screen is completely amazing. The amount of processing power, and especially graphics processing power, is insane. It's like, what, 0.8 centimeters thick. You can put it in your backpack. You can get it with wireless internet. So you can, it's amazing. And I think we're only starting to realize the power there as we develop apps that can take advantage of it.
Are there any iPad apps out there that are absolutely killing it with their experience and their UI that you admire? Not necessarily like note taking or anything, just what inspires you in terms of design?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure as many apps have had the opportunity to take such a opinionated shot at this as we have. So it's, I feel like it's maybe not a fair comparison, but certainly one that we've looked to is Procreate. You know, Procreate is a professional tool that uniquely takes advantage of the tablet form factor and that has had a lot of commercial success. And that's the kind of model that we're going for. Now, we don't specifically want to build a drawing tool as they have done. But we like what they've done with taking advantage of the iPad specifically.
Are there any resources online that host popular design patterns for tablets in case one of our listeners is tasked with designing an app and they want to bring themselves up to speed?
Ooh, I don't know. I think not a big central repository that I know of. I mean, there's some writing out there, and some of it is linked from the Ink & Swift website, for example. So you can check out the articles that we've done on tablet design there. But yeah, it's a young and emerging field, which, I mean, I think there's a lot of opportunity there, people who want to step up into it, but still early. One research that I can point to is Microsoft Research has done a lot of interesting work in this area. So if you look at their website, they publish a lot of papers. They often do these cool videos, like these 2-minute videos that show the thing that they're working on. And that can be a good entryway into the whole world of academic research on tablets, which I think is really interesting and underappreciated. I mean, we could do a whole podcast about HCI and academics, but if you just kind of start looking at the papers and following the references, you could find a lot of interesting, more experimental work on the potential future of tablet interfaces.
As we're speaking of the future, what's next for Muse? Are you planning to refine what you have, or are there any ambitious features coming up?
Oh yeah, there's a lot more to do. So one big theme is moving content in and out of Muse. We talked about this earlier. We think it's really important that it's easier to get content in and to move it out. So we plan to be able to ingest content with a browser extension, a phone app, perhaps a desktop app. Maybe you can email yourself stuff, things like this, as well as being able to export. Maybe you can export different file formats. Maybe you can create a web link and so on. So that's one big bucket. Another big one for us is collaboration. Now, there's a kind of obvious thing you could do, which is like make Google Docs for Muse where everyone dials into the same URL and there's little avatars in the upper hand corner and everyone has a color and you follow along, That's the kind of thing everyone does. And maybe we'll do that. But we suspect there's a unique and more humane way to collaborate that more reflects how people actually do their creative work. And just to give you a taste of that, most people really don't like doing their most creative work in public. They like to go to their private office and scribble some notes and make some ideas. And then when they're ready, they come out and they share the work with a small group of friends and then they spread out from there, right? So we kind of want to replicate that dynamic somehow with our collaboration features, but that's still very early days, so we'll see how it goes.
Collaboration is clearly one of the popular software trends, well, by necessity, actually. Are there any others that are on your mind in addition to that?
Yeah, I think collaboration, I think security and privacy is going to be a huge deal. I think we've kind of been saying this and we've been thinking about it, but I think we could very well see a big event where it really brings it to the forefront again. So we'll be thinking about that carefully with Muse. Another one that I mentioned is this mixed media cards on a canvas idea that's emerging as a sort of standard content type in the same way that folders or files or sets of files in a folder have been for a long time. So I expect to see more of that. And the last one that I'll mention is this idea of local first software. So we wrote about this in the research lab, but the way most productivity software works today is that you have your content hosted like on Google Docs or Notion, and they basically control all of your content. And if you ever want to read it or edit it, you open up a web page that dials into that and you access it on the fly. And then when you're done, it shuts down. You have nothing on your computer. The local first model is more like you have a full copy of all your content on your device. And whenever you want to edit something or read something, regardless of whether you're connected to the internet or whatever the service provider thinks, you can do that. And then additionally, you have the ability to collaborate by connecting over a network, but that doesn't prevent you from ever accessing or using your own content locally. So if you put all these things together, maybe eventually Muse will be local first, collaborative, secure mixed media canvas. I think that'd be a pretty cool future.
That sounds super exciting. As we're wrapping up today's episode, could you tell us where people can find yourself and your lab and Muse online?
Yeah, so you can find Muse at museapp.com, Ink and Switch at inkandswitch.com, and myself, you can search for my name, it will come up in Google or DuckDuckGo.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for sharing your insights, opinions about trends and everything else. It's been exciting.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Thank you, and hope you have a wonderful rest of your week.
You too. Bye.